I just mentioned a few ways we can do this. First of all, we've had an incredibly active audience. Thank you so much for all the on the chat. So I have copied and pasted all your questions. So I think we'll take some turns, so doing some on the chat box, opening the line, and then people in the room. So for our in-person audience, please state your name before asking your question. For our online audience, can you ask a question by typing it in the Q&A box? You can also ask a question using the microphone on your computer by selecting the raise hand feature from the menu above, and we will grant you microphone rights in the order the questions come in. So let's see. I'll just take a few from the chat and then turn it to you. Okay, so let's start with Robert Brader. Can Playwork share a typical aligned output and outcome performance measure? I'll read a couple of these and then our speakers could take it. Carol Cutler-White, how is evidence quantified? Alicia Sanders asks, how did you disseminate findings so that critical decision makers were aware of the results of Reading Core? So I'll just start right there and then we'll take the from in here. So any of the speakers want to answer?
I can start with responding to the question about how we disseminated findings to critical decision makers. You know, what we found to work the best was having in-person meetings, and usually sort of smaller meetings, where we could really sit down face-to-face with that person to talk about what the results look like and meant. What we found is that if it's just an email or something that's sent to somebody, they really don't get the full context or maybe don't take the time to read, you know, sort of the meat of what's in there. So we found that in person, being able to walk through and present it, usually on an individual basis, was really critical. We also found that actually bringing them out on a site visit, if they had time and were able to, really helped them visualize and see what that model was to connect it to the results.
Anyone else?
This is Laura. I can respond to the quantifiable evidence question. I would say that we look at a number of different types of evidence to support and inform our programming. The first and sort of most obvious are student outcomes, are students persisting and graduating, but obviously we can't wait around for 4 to 6 years to find that out. And so we look for sort of predictive factors on a more intermittent basis. So we look at things like, have students registered for classes for the following semester? Have they filed their financial aid applications? And then we also look at coaching metrics. So our model is centered on coaching sessions between our AmeriCorps members and the students that they support. And so we're tracking those activities in our database and taking a look at duration. We're taking a look at of modality. Are they having a voice-to-voice conversation, or is it over text or Facebook? And then also, what are the topics that they're discussing, and what types of questions and concerns are the students raising? And then finally, we also look at student survey results. So we survey our students. We occasionally do focus groups and things like that to try to get more qualitative information around the student experience and how that intersects with what we're trying to accomplish.
Thank you. I'm just going to, speakers, do you have any other thing you want to add to any of those?
This is Dean from Reading Partners. I'll add one other thought to the question around dissemination. Absolutely agree that it's highly beneficial to have one-on-one sit-down meetings or potentially over the phone. We did, at the conclusion of our MDRC evaluation, our first SIF grant, and that rigorous evaluation, we held some webinar conversations as well and invited some of our key donors and stakeholders to those as conversations in which we presented some information and then had a Q&A session, much like this is going. But the other thing we've learned in the last few years as well is very few people like to read a 50, 100, 150-page report. And so having an executive summary, and even more so, if possible, if you could find the resources in your community where someone is good at data visualization and can create
an infogram.
I'm blanking on the word. Someone could help me out here. It's a visual. Thank you. An infograph. We found that infographs have been helpful as well.
Thank you. So we're going to take a few questions from people here in the audience. Can you say your name?
Yeah. Hi. This is Sunil Iyengar. I just was wondering. I think this is touching on something Mary said about the organizations. How not only was a big part of all these presentations the collection of evidence or data on evidence of effectiveness and impact, but also there was quite a bit about expansion and moving into other areas. And so I was wondering kind of, I think the three presentations in the middle, not necessarily the first or the last, all kind of spoke about the degree to which demand played a role in their theory of change or the way they structured their data collection and evidence collection. And so I'm kind of wondering if in the first one of them actually talked about branding. And I guess, is there a tension between, and how do you resolve that kind of tension that may occur in making course corrections and, on the one hand, you know, changing programming based on data about the implementation process or data about the evidence on the, I mean, impact, versus, on the other hand, maybe whether people just want it to happen anyway, you know, and whether there's a demand for that particular service and whether you should grow and expand even absent some of that harder data about efficacy. And I don't know if that's something that anyone feels like speaking to. Maybe that's not.
You know, hi, this is Adam from, you know, Citizen Schools. I mean, I think that's certainly the absence of understanding and distinguishing between, you know, what was robust support for a capital campaign that sort of facilitated, you know, that growth initially, and differentiating between demand and what was also sort of available in districts, you know, to fund. I think it took us longer than we should have to have done a significant research project to look at discretionary funding within districts and middle schools. And I think, you know, once we did that landscape analysis and found out that, you know, middle school principals had, you know, I believe somewhere around $1,200, you know, for all discretionary programming, it became very clear to us that there was, you know, sort of a deficiency between kind of our theory of what would work and what was possible. And I think as you're getting off and going and people are supporting scale and you continue to, you know, grow, there's a demand for it as long as you're paying. And so really trying to do that landscape analysis seems, you know, quite commonsensical, but for whatever reason took us a while to actually kind of do in a robust way, and that ended up sort of informing some of our decisions. And then also, you know, continue to understand, you know, I think as others talked about what makes a good partner, there are so many kind of residual or school-based factors that impact, you know, the success of the program. We needed to become really good at sort of, you know, understanding not just kind of our program, you know, quality indicators, but what needed to be in place in order to create the ecosystem for us to be successful. You know, I think all of those certainly, you know, not just relate to demand, but, you know, good demand, the right demand, you know, to allow for sustainable scale.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any other speaker? Any other speaker want to reply to that? Okay. So another question from the room.
I'm Clint Brass from the Congressional Research Service, and speaking for myself, not for my agency. I have to say that or else I get fired. My question is about heterogeneity of contexts and clients. And so, you know, borrowing some terminology from the medical field, you know, before you come in with a therapy, you do some diagnosis. And I'm just wondering in how you structured your offerings and you talk with folks out there, how do you structure your conversations about heterogeneity to assess fit for context and clients, not only at the outset, kind of like the initial diagnosis, but also as things move along, you know, a patient and working with a doctor or a team of doctors to decide, all right, this course isn't working well, maybe we need to adapt our program model, engage in some adaptation, maybe get away from the core model in some ways. How do you structure those kinds of conversations, or is that an area that's still developing?
Would a presenter take that, or say why not?
This is Dean.
Laura. Go ahead, Dean.
No, go ahead, Laura.
Okay, I'll take a stab at it.
I'll follow you.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think that I would say for college possible, I think the answer to that is somewhere in between doing as much prep work as possible. I think that a lot of the looking into the evidence to sort of define what the program is that we believe works helps us then define what are the sort of key components or the non-negotiable parts of that. And then I think real life application in different markets and environments teaches us more about the context in which that particular model or that particular approach is effective. And so I would say one part of my answer is a lot of thoughtfulness and prep work and research on the front end around what we believe are those sort of key ingredients. And then also that sort of constant negotiation and push and pull as we sort of take our model into new environments. And it is a lot of just sort of in the moment discussion and sometimes debate and conversation and then further analysis to see how we need to adapt so that we're being as responsive as possible to students without losing fidelity to the model.
This is Dean from Reading Partners. I'll echo that. I think an illustrative example for us over time has been the curriculum and the model as it had been developed. I remember a program manager sharing with me that her perspective was, let's say a second grader would come in and be enrolled in the program, and the suggestion was that this student is going to move through the curriculum in the plan, scope, and sequence that we have made for the program, and that those steps and sequences would happen no matter what those individual students' needs were. And that really pushed us to change and think about data collection and analysis in an ongoing way, and what is now certainly a big thing that happens in most, if not all, schools with teachers, and the data that they look at is progress monitoring. And so being able to differentiate our approach a little bit more so for each individual student and individualize what their needs are. We've always had an individualized reading plan, but I think we're getting better at that. I think we're getting better at the local coaching and support adaptation that's needed for each student. And we continually ask what we can change or might need to adapt further in our program model. And then there are exterior forces as well. Sometimes those are donors. Sometimes those are school or district partners. Could be what else we see happening in the field and where there's other evidence of success. And so in our case, an example of that would be that Reading Partners has been looking at and pilot testing different program models and approaches to summer learning. So rather than just looking at our core program throughout the school year, what can we provide and support for students during the summertime?
Thank you. I'm going to read a few more from our chat box, and this has to do more comments, but around the same issues that you all are mentioning. Someone stressed that the prisons, all of your presentations stress the importance of process evaluations. And Jeff Sheldon writes, it appears that process evaluations are based on a theoretical model of how the program is designed to work, an outcome evaluation based on the theory of change. So it's a comment, but again, Maybe you can say something about the importance of this process evaluation and how you were able to think of your components.
This is Sadie O'Connor with Reading Corps, and I would totally agree with the importance of that process assessment part. When we went through our pretty rigorous evaluation that CNCS actually commissioned NORC to conduct on Reading Corps a few years ago, one of the first things that they did was conduct the process assessment. And that, you know, involved going out and observing what was happening in schools, talking with tutors, talking with coaches, talking with teachers, to really understand, is the program being implemented like the theory of change is articulating it should be. And when that process assessment was completed, then they had the confidence to be able to move into a more rigorous you know, randomized control trial, which was really looking at our outcomes, because we knew that the model was being applied consistently across all of our locations. So then could do an assessment of students that were getting Reading Corps compared to an assessment of students that were not getting Reading Corps to see what the impact of Reading Corps really, really truly was. But that process assessment, I just think, was really super valuable. In the whole process.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else? Okay, and then thinking of the next step, Tara Rice, thanks to you all for the presentation, but how are your projects monitoring and maintaining fidelity and quality of implementation once you scale up your programs and services?
This is Laura. I can take a gander at that one, since this is something that we are sort of have been building out pretty actively in the last year or two. So we have a couple of staff members at our main office, our program advisors, who directly support the supervisors on the campuses, who are in turn directly supervising the AmeriCorps members, the coaches. And so the program advisors conduct monitoring visits on a quarterly basis, where they physically go to the campus and do observations of the coaching. They also do weekly check-ins with the supervisors, where, you know, a lot of it is spent sort of troubleshooting and answering questions, but they are also asking questions to try to ascertain if the program is being implemented as intended. And then the other thing that we look at, I mentioned this earlier, but we look at a lot of outcomes, which include both obviously student outcomes like retention on that campus, but also things like the activities that the coaches are recording in our database, and whether that's reflective of the types of coaching sessions that we ask them to do as part of our program.
This is Sadie from Reading Corps, and I'll chime in too. We have a role that we call an internal coach, so it's basically a supervisor at the school that's supervising and supporting the AmeriCorps members. And we actually have what we call fidelity checklists, and the coaches do those 2 times a month. So every intervention that we have and every assessment that we have has a corresponding checklist. So when the coach is going in to observe the tutor, they're actually doing it with a checklist, so we can actually measure and sort of monitor and support the tutor in getting to fidelity. And then we also have 3 times a year before our assessment period in the fall, winter, and spring, our coaches are also monitoring and observing the fidelity of the assessment data. I think somebody else had a comment and sort of wondering, how do you know if the assessment data is sort of true and accurate? So making sure before they collect assessment data that we're observing them to make sure that they're conducting that correctly.
Wonderful. Anyone else?
This is Dean from Reading Partners. The one other thing I would add is with our partnerships with several state AmeriCorps commissions and the ongoing cycles with CNCS around evaluation requirements and expectations, depending on the size of your grant, I really appreciate that we continue to do our work at Reading Partners in terms of evaluation, where we conduct more studies rather than just these one-time implementation and impact studies. And so You know, we're really proud of what we learned in the five-year process and study that was in partnership with Ogden Blick Palish and Associates here in Colorado. The last 5 years, those results came out in the fall. We continue to use that information as well as a two-year study we just concluded in the fall in our four California regions, which was much more of an exploratory study, but built on the APA and NBRC evaluations around certain processes. And for us, that includes volunteer recruitment and retention, the number of sessions we're able to provide to students. And when we're looking at dosage, for example, those studies have had us looking at it in a more granular and specific way, and it's causing our program team to have conversations and think about how we might change operations on a weekly and or monthly basis rather than think about, you know, half a year or the full year in terms of total dosage that a student might get in terms of literacy intervention and tutoring, and more about what are they getting every week, every month. So there's a standardization and expectation for the program model. And we've got program dashboards and regional dashboards that we follow a lot of data around, but those specific evaluations have pushed us to look at dosage in a new and different way. And so I think ongoing work on this process and qualitative side can be really valuable and helpful as well.
Thanks. So turning from that to funding, Carol Cutler-White asks, have any programs been successful in getting state funding for long-term sustainability? And I think maybe that one or two of you spoke about that.
Yes, this is Sadie with Reading Corps. And our state funding has really been part of our financial sustainability. We started with $150,000 from the state in 2003, and now in Minnesota that's grown to be about $6.5 million annually. Reading Corps is a state appropriation, so it's built into the base, which is great that's built into the base, and just over the years we've continued to request an increase to that. This current year, we also have launched our program in Wisconsin, but this past current year, we also have received state funding in Wisconsin.
That's fantastic. Any other speaker?
College Possible has received state funding in Minnesota as well, and that has been, echoing Sadie, a pretty important part of our financial sustainability there. And it is something that we're exploring in some of our other states, but seems to be more feasible in some of our larger, more mature sites.
We're all saying that we're moving to Minnesota. okay. Any of you want to say a little bit more, not just state funding, but funding in general? Any words? I mean, I know you mentioned it in some of your presentations. Okay. So Sadie, just a question. Someone would love to hear about the platform that Reading Corps built their student data management system on.
Sure. I wish it was a simple answer. It has been something that we've custom built. So we've kind of used this variety of programming frameworks, and we have a team of developers that are working on it. So feel free to reach out to me if you'd like more information, but it's not a simple answer.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm looking at the time. It's 3:22, and we have lots of questions that we may not be able to get to. So I think I'm going to say it now. If we don't get to your question, please email us at evaluation@cns.gov. Some of them might have been answered already, as speakers have been answering other questions, and we will get it to the right speaker and be able to answer that. So let's see, just in terms of, I'm trying to see something that we haven't talked about. Magdalena Bianchi says, great presentation. Sadly, we're at 34% literacy in San Bernardino County. I'm a nonprofit CEO, executive director, tuning in from San Bernardino, and I think it's just, for those of you who are working on it, just a comment. So you have that low literacy rate. I'm sure some of you have faced that in your own school. Where do you start?
AmeriCorps, naturally.
<He's>
This is Dean from Reading Partners. I'll share that. That's a fairly consistent rate in terms of literacy at the elementary level in the schools in which we partner, and in many of our schools, it's actually substantially lower. We look at both school and district proficiency rates on the third or fourth grade reading state reading tests, and in some of our districts, it can be as low as 5%. And so we've collected both and looked at those data both at the district and or school level, but we've also looked at the rates for the individual students that we serve. I would say for us over time, in the importance of growing and expanding and scaling our program, we've really thought about the importance of looking for resources, how to look for high quality resources that are already out there in existence. As much as we have built a proprietary curriculum and a model and a program that we think really works, and we've got evidence to show for that, we also know the need is great. In the millions of students. It's important to us, and I think to you and your program, that you think about looking for partners, looking for coalitions, other places that bring together resources or curate vet high-quality resources that can be used. I would look to your local community to see if there are volunteers who would be interested in getting involved and getting the word out. There may be low-entry kinds of programs to just get started. But I would certainly look to what's out there in terms of resources, and I would look to the evidence that's there and use impactful models.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the question. So just turning a little bit in terms of member recruitment and experience, probably AmeriCorps. Curious how, and this is Robin Harris, curious how, and this is to any presenter, saw the member recruitment experience change during scale? What worked, what didn't, any unique member benefits? Are members paid above the minimum living allowance if full-time?
This is Laura from College Possible. One of the really big benefits of our catalyzed model and the fact that the campuses are taking so much ownership over the program that's being implemented on their campuses, instead of doing our sort of wide scale, cast a wide net, recruit as many members as possible. Those campuses do pretty targeted recruitment on their campuses, and so generally they're able to find alums of their campus to serve as coaches on that campus. And because most of them are recruiting, between 2 and 5 people instead of our organization recruiting 300 people, they're able to be pretty targeted and have an easier time in general filling their spots. I think all of us have probably experienced some recruitment challenges in the last couple of years, and so that's been a really big benefit. The other thing that a lot of our campuses are doing is because they want those members to be so embedded on their campus, they're offering room and board in some cases, and so that's been also a really big benefit for our members to make the living allowance and all of that more doable.
Thank you. Anyone else with the AmeriCorps member recruitment and benefits?
Yeah, this is Sadie from Reading Corps, and I would echo what Laura said about really engaging partners in the recruitment process. We really work closely with our school partners so that they can recruit from their own communities, parents, grandparents, community members that they know. We're still experiencing recruitment challenges, but that has consistently been a really good strategy to find members.
Okay, thank you. This is the last question I'm going to mention. Carol Cutler-White asks about any of these results have any of these results been published in peer-reviewed journals? If so, is there a list of references? So we just said in the chat box to look at our website, our webpage under evaluation, our evidence exchange, where we have reports and papers probably from all the speakers you've heard from. Again, you can write to us, evaluation@cns.gov, and we will send the question to the right individual. Anything else? Any other place? Okay. So before I I close, I just want to turn to Mary, Lily, and Anthony. Anything you want to add, point out? We're at 3:28.
I would just like that. I thought this was a wonderful conversation, and the fact that we have talented presenters who are willing to share their experiences with other grantees is it's remarkable. And I think it's a trend that we need to foster and we need to continue here. There's an emerging science, at least as we understand it, around scaling that allows for all of the different variations in programs on the ground and circumstances on the ground, but identifies core components. And each one of the speakers today touched on those core components. And I think rehashing them and learning them and applying them is a critical element to moving forward with this. It's a long journey, but I believe that many of the folks who are listening can see a path forward if we support them, we provide them with this information and this knowledge. So I'd like to see this continue, and I'd like to say this was a wonderful introduction to our guidance documents that have been put together that we'll be releasing shortly. So a lot of the information is contained in those things. We expect high traffic there from all of you. And any questions, please direct them back to us. Thank you very much.
Okay. So as we mentioned before, this is being recorded and will be on our website in a couple weeks. So we want to thank you again, especially to our speakers and our audience today for such a great discussion. And I saw that, you know, again, all of you were signing in from all over the place. We had over 300 people register, and we've had over 160 participate, so that is fabulous. I also want to thank Emily Reynes of ICF International and her colleague, and our colleague, Greg Wallinger, for their technical support and coordination, because that is its own very big task. And Erica Zulisky of OMB for helping us coordinate the workshop series. We will be sending out a post-webinar survey, so please let us know your thoughts and any webinar ideas for the future. And that's it. So thank you so much, and have a nice evening.